Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
Welcome in to another episode of Turn the Corner, a Detroit Tigers podcast. I am Kieran Steckley. With me, as always, is a man who has an approval rating that mirrors that of the song Spirit in the Sky. He is Cody Stavenhagen. How you doing?
Doing great, Kieran. That is a heck of a song. If anyone dislikes that song, like, what is wrong with you? Even in the terrible world of social media, I don't think anyone dislikes that song.
Yeah, I mean, it's catchy as hell. I was thinking, because I was watching like a random TV episode and was playing, I was like, what, even the staunchest atheists hate this song? I feel like it's just catchy enough.
Could make you a believer. Just listen to it for 2 minutes. Yeah. Might change your life.
Hell of a song, hell of a song, hell of a time, hell of a great time to be doing this podcast with you, Cody. And now you are actually now back in Detroit. You were in Lakeland, obviously. Now you're back for a little bit. You obviously will go back here later. But I did kind of want to incorporate this into the beginning of the podcast, in the sense that you were boots on the ground for, you know, 2+ weeks. Now we're approaching dog days. I don't think we're quite at dog days of camp, but we're getting there. Now that you're separated from it and you look back to, you know, being there every day, talking to the guys, talking to AJ, seeing Scott, seeing Chris, like, all these things. Do you have a grasp of, like I guess, like, kind of the theme of camp to this point? Because we have the general talking points of the young team. We have the general talking points of, you know, the pitching stronghold. It'll be the, you know, but when you look back and you're doing it from afar, like, what do you see as, like, the theme of the Tigers to this point, still relatively early in the spring training process?
Well, I wish I could sit here and be like, yeah, I came home and I just had this grand epiphany. Like, I have a totally different perspective on Tigers camp. I really don't, you know, it's kind of the same. I think this is, as I've said many a times, probably the healthiest the organization has been in a long time, probably the healthiest camp in terms of the roster, the only a few openings, and as a result, that might be the most boring camp. Not boring in that it's stale. It's just there's some topical things, but you don't have that Akil Badu vying to make the roster. You don't have just a completely wide open infield. There are a lot of things that are pretty set in stone, and so then I think the themes are pretty set in stone. It's the young team. How are they going to do life after Miguel Cabrera, with it being Riley Green and Spencer Torkelson and Tarik Skubal's team? How does that change the mood in the room? Can Javi Baez be anything good? I think probably the most interesting thing right now is the pitching. You have at least 6 starters vying, in theory, for 5 spots. We've seen varying levels. We've seen results and struggle a little bit. We'll talk about Matt Manning later. He was really good on Sunday. Casey Mize, some things to like, definitely still getting a feel for that command. Like, that's really, I think, kind of become the talking points. And the thing about spring training, it gets slow fast. So I don't know, like, there are different topics that come up, but I think, like, the big picture talking points have been set, and cross your fingers and pray there's no catastrophic injury. It's probably going to be the same for the next few weeks here in the lead up to opening day.
So having done this the past several years with you, Cody, I've, you know, caught myself various times getting excited or reading things a little deeper than what it actually is when it comes to some of the stuff that happens in spring training. And I don't want to, I think it's too crass to say, like, the terms like doesn't matter, but it's also not the other end of the spectrum. So I don't know where even still I lie, but I'll tell you what, I'll tell you one thing. Watching Matt Manning today, I don't think the term doesn't matter was applicable to that guy, because he was intense from the jump, even with, like, you know, if he just barely missed a location, kind of catching the ball and kind of violently, like, bringing it down, you know what I mean? And he had you would have thought this was April 10th, honestly, like, with the way that he kind of, like, approached it, just like his demeanor, his mannerisms, trying to make plays on foul balls down the first base line. It was kind of fun to see. It was kind of fun to see some level of intensity brought on a Sunday afternoon in early March. Like, it was fun to see. And the results were pretty damn promising. So he hangs one to Juan Soto, and, you know, you hang one to Juan Soto, you kind of just be like, all right, well, missed that one. Happens to a lot of people. But I didn't necessarily care about that, but I was like, all right, how is he going to respond? Because we know how Manning is, like, the bulldog demeanor, and just overall, no one would say that he's reached his promise yet. I was like, how is he going to respond in this little moment here? Strikeout of Aaron Judge. Strikeout of Anthony Rizzo. And then he retired six more batters to finish his day. He ended up three innings. You know, the one hit, the one run. He had four Ks. He had zero walks. That's about as good as you can feel about Matt Manning in spring training and early in the season. Hell, maybe late in the season. Obviously, you have to pitch more than three innings. But in terms of, like, that, what we saw today, that's going to be hard for me not to get excited for. And again, it was his, like, first time. We've been kind of thinking, where is he? Like, literally going into today, Cody, I was like, is he just kind of the person we're not talking about because the organization is telling us, you know, kind of going to get iced out? You see what happened today? It's hard for me to say, like, ice out. Like, Matt Manning looks like somebody, or at least today in a spring training game, I'll be very hyperbolic here. He looked like exactly kind of what you hope for. And then he's throwing 96. He's got two sliders now, apparently. He's going with a splitter. Like, what is going on with Matt Manning, Cody?
Well, you got to tip your cap to Matt Manning. I think it was only three innings today, but it was the best I have seen him maybe ever. And I had a couple things that stood out. There was the Soto at bat, and he gets ahead 1-2, and then Soto fouls off three pitches. And that third pitch, 96, elevated, outer third of the plate, Soto fouled it off. And I saw Matt's pretty expressive with his body language. He kind of shrugged. You could tell he liked the pitch. He's like, ew. Next pitch, hangs a slider, gone, 405 feet. And I was like, all right. The velocity's good, but we've kind of seen this before. Matt Manning can't miss bats. He's not putting away guys with two strikes. Facing the best hitters in the world, if you don't have something to miss a bat, to get out of that leverage count, you're in trouble. And I was like, all right, it's cool that he's throwing 96, 97, but, like, I got to see more. And you know what happened then? We saw a whole lot more. We saw the slider look really sharp. We saw a splitter, which he is still refining a little bit, only threw a couple of times. The one he generated a strikeout on was nasty. I was like, this is the pitch Matt Manning needs. I've been critical of him for a while. Like, you get it. His fastball is great. His fastball can be an elite fastball. But if you want to be a starter in this league, you got to have more than one and a half pitches. And if I want to see more of this splitter. The slider was as sharp as I've seen it. definitely really encouraging. For the pitching competition as a whole, I will say, I think we're going to learn more in the final 2 weeks of camp than we are the first 2 weeks of camp or of games here. When guys start getting stretched out, when they start facing hitters multiple times, that tends to be more telling. But so far, if you're Matt Manning, who, like you just said, I feared was on the verge of getting squeezed off the roster, you cannot ask for anything more. Here's a guy who's putting his foot down and saying, hey, don't forget about me.
Yeah, and it's also funny to hear, like, on the broadcast, and obviously they're talking about things guys are working on. It was like two sliders, one slower than the other. It made me think of, I think Bob Ryan said this a couple years ago on X, at the time Twitter, and he was like, we're just making up pitches now because it's this, it's that, you know. It just made me laugh. So I guess if you have two sliders and it's like, it's more of this, it's more of that, it's a split, it's more of this, it's more than that, more power to you, I guess. But the bottom line is he's got a large velocity drop on these pitches. And one of the reasons that I was worried about, like, his status on the team is you talked about not missing bats. He probably, among the guys that in this rebuild you were kind of, like, banking on, hoping would pop, I feel like he's one that his skill set doesn't align as much with the new administration as some of the other guys. And so I was getting a little concerned about that. At least for a day, concerns alleviated. And I'll also add, we should mention that Casey Mize went two innings. You know, he did have two walks, but he had two Ks, gave up a hit. If this was 2020, obviously pre-pandemic, but if this was 2020, this would have been like the greatest day in Detroit Tigers rebuild history, you know, to have, you know, Manning and Mize kind of piggyback off each other. And even Mize, to hit, you know, we talked a lot about him, but he looks like somebody who's at least on the right track to getting back and solidifying a rotation spot as well. So I guess if you had to do like a projection right now, you almost would say like Reese Olsen's the odd man out, which I'm not sure the way everybody was talking about him, like, I'm not sure I would have predicted that.
I think it's too early, like I said, to make those big conclusions. Like, I guess who's pitched the worst out of the three right now? It's Reese Olsen. It's not really close. But I think there's more to learn about these guys. You want to see them stretched out. You want to see them in a couple of different settings before, especially someone like Reese Olsen, who had a lot of success at the tail end of last year, gets booted off the roster. That's the weird thing about spring training, is it's a constant kind of battle in your mind. How much should we actually care about the results on the field? Well, maybe not everything. I think AJ Hinch even said, you know, after Reese's second outing, that Reese got hit around a little bit, but he liked that he was in the zone. He liked that he was challenging hitters. That's what he wanted to see from him. So in a way, maybe Reese checked a box. Now you can look at Matt Manning's outing and it's like, okay, everything process-wise, everything he needed to show you, like he did show you in a big way. Casey Mize, like, okay, so still grappling for the command. To be honest, most of Casey Mize's career, he hasn't had very good command in spring training, which is just kind of an interesting aside. Also kind of tells you, like, oh yeah, well, it's spring training. He usually locks it in and is capable of having better command once the regular season rolls around. Although I've always been like, is his fastball command really as good as we were led to believe? So good to see him healthy. That's all a long way of saying we got a lot more of camp to go. But if all three of these guys pitch well, there's also a world in which they all three make the roster.
Yeah, that is true. And I guarantee you, if we're recording this podcast basically right after the game ended, so we haven't looked at post-game availability or anything like that, but I guarantee you that AJ at some point would say, or if it was prompted to, he would definitely say, like, you know, we're talking about good problems here. If Mize is improving and Manning is kind of locked in and Reese is checking boxes, like, they're not complaining about having these issues. I'll just say that.
Here's another takeaway from Matt Manning. I don't want to see him coming out of the gate throwing 91, 92, like, ever again. You know, like, if I'm Chris Fetter, I'm sitting down and be like, okay, do that every time because we know you're capable of it. It's always been a little weird, the fluctuation in his velocity. I've asked about it. I've never got really a great answer for why. Maybe it's some mechanical tweaks. At one point, they were talking about he needed to generate more force off the ground, whatever. We've seen this guy throw upper 90s. Today, he was throwing 96, 97 without sacrificing command. Again, that's why I want to see him stretched out longer. Can he do that for 5-6 innings? But I'm like, this guy is too good to come out and just throw 92. Like that, we got to be done with that.
No, that's true. And I think as long as there's been a radar gun, there's been guys trying to figure out how come velocity isn't as consistent as you would like it to be, right? And he's not the only one. We saw Wilmer Flores finally get back to the velocity of old there for, you know, reasons that are probably trade secrets in general. But yeah, that was another thing too. Like the velocity difference, like I said earlier, for Manny was quite impressive, and it just kind of gave you thoughts of, you know, we've done this podcast basically every year. We've probably said, like, you know, there's a scout or there's a coach that will kind of whisper, it's like, you know, Matt Manning, this is before Scooble kind of became Scooble, so it's like, you know, Matt Manning could be better than Mize. He could be better than Mize. And I'm not really sure anyone wants to kind of like tie their reputation to either one at this point, but in terms of like the stuff there, it's like, oh yeah, that's why he was like the 9th overall pick or, you know, whatever. So it was nice to see Manning do that, because I did kind of think maybe, like I said, maybe there's like an ice out situation. So right now he's the camp darling of the day, but there's not really a camp darling that we can kind of point to, Cody. I was thinking about this earlier because, you know, pretty much every year we've had a guy or two that kind of captivated the attention. It was Akil Baddoo. It was Nick Maton, you know. There's no one really that's kind of been grabbing that bull by the horns, which is probably a good thing overall, you know. But it got me thinking, because I'm like, what are the storylines at camp? It's like, well, no one's really just kind of been the pizzazz. Willie Castro starting off with a home run off Gerrit Cole. Like, there hasn't really been like a moment like that, which is, it's weird. It may be kind of overall a good thing for the healthy organization and like and the status of guys. We kind of know who's what. But I had a thought. I was like, is it Andy Abanez? Is he, or is he like too, is he overqualified to be a camp darling because he is more or less like a multi-year major league regular at this point? Like who is there a camp darling right now?
Yeah. I mean, I think we have a few candidates. I think in the next couple of weeks, it's going to evolve. Maybe it's where someone is a true camp darling. Matt Manning, we talked about, I think at this point it might be Eddie's Leonard. I mean, there was a debate on, there were people fighting on Tigers Twitter, like, oh, should he take Javi Baez's job? Which is an asinine conversation to have, but like, he's generating some buzz from the people and he's playing really, really well. You know, I don't really think he's a everyday shortstop in the big leagues defensively, but he can play a few different positions. He hits the ball really hard. It does make you wonder, like, okay, the Dodgers gave up on this guy. Like there's got to be something. You know, if you were this all-world talent, I don't think the Dodgers are giving him away for free. But the Tigers liked him from the jump, and he's played very, very well since joining the system. I've been excited about Leonard really since, like, started hearing, you know, Scott Harris and A.J. Hinch talk about him back in December. And he's lived up to that billing so far in camp. So he gets a couple more balls to leave the yard. We should hear more Tigers should cut Baez and take Leonard type of conversations. He could be your camp darling. Andy Abanez, man, another thing I was saying, like, this guy was just ahead of everyone from the first day of batting practice. I don't know if it's because he's the only guy who sits there and tracks pitches while pitches are throwing bullpens.
Cool.
If I'm his teammate and I'm seeing what Andy is doing right now, I'd be like, all right, next year I'm tracking pitches and bullpens, because he just seems like a step ahead, playing really well. I almost think he should get more attention and more love. Something about him, like, kind of a soft-spoken guy, just goes about his business. Was kind of underappreciated for having an 8.19 OPS after, I think, the start of June last year. Like, Andy Abanez has done some really, really good things. So I want to see him continue to get more attention if he plays like this. Drew Anderson really dazzled his first outing. Command wasn't quite as sharp Sunday, but fastball is still like 97, so he may be a name to watch. Like we have a few, maybe not darlings, but we got a few camp sweethearts right now.
Ooh, I like that. Camp Sweethearts.
Yeah.
That's good. That's good. I did want to say that there was a guy that I was hopeful would maybe emerge as a camp darling. The fact that he hasn't isn't indicative of anything. But you wrote about him this week, actually, Cody, and a guy that I'm hella interested in, Ryan Belaid. So I'm in North Texas. He grew up Grapevine, Frisco, all these suburbs of Dallas Fort Worth, and he ends up in Stillwater because his dad is a baseball coach. His dad was a coach at Oklahoma State at one time. So I watched this kid play in high school. He was a third base at the time. He played, or he was drafted in the second round by the Rockies. I don't know what years are running together. Was it 2017, 18,
17,
17,
17, yeah.
17? And I remember thinking at the time, people were going to think I'm lying. I remember thinking at the time, I was like, all right, so he's a draft prospect. He's obviously, he's not going to go play at Oklahoma State like he was committed to. This guy could get on a Nick Castellanos trajectory, and I think it would make a lot of sense. He's a bigger guy, you know what I mean? Now, obviously, that hasn't happened. So he's not the prospect that Nick was, or, the player profile Nick was. But in terms of not an infielder, eventually, for whatever reason, goes into the outfield. Now he might go back into the infield. He's a guy that is also, like I was explaining to some of our friends, college friends, Cody. I was like, he's a guy that is like a classic dude to bring into this organization at this point, where he's got some tools, he's got some things that you like, he's gonna provide some organizational depth, and who knows, if he gets in your system, your infrastructure, maybe something's there that hasn't facilitated at this point. He has made his major league debut, but he's hitless in what, seven plate appearances. So that's him, the player. But you wrote about him, the family man, the person, this week, and hard to find a better guy to root for.
Yeah, look, the reality is Ryan Vlade probably not going to make this roster. He'll be a nice option to have in Toledo. Maybe we'll see him, maybe we won't. He's lower on the pecking order, no doubt. But one of the cool things about spring training, it's the best time of year to just talk to guys at their lockers, learn about them, whatever it may be. And you said, we had the Stillwater connection, so I was interested to get to know Ryan a little bit. And man, one of those people, you talk to him, and then I talked to his dad, James, and it's like, wow. Sometimes you talk to people who make you feel bad about yourself as a person. It's like, these are just some great human beings. James Valade has a foundation called Keeper of the Game. He's had it for 10 years. It's geared toward helping those with Down syndrome and autism and physical disabilities and a wide range of other situations. It helps that community, and it helps spread the game of baseball. It uses baseball as an avenue to get these kids some opportunities, get them some cool experiences, also raises funds and awareness and has scholarships. They put a ton of work into it, and Ryan the son has taken to it pretty naturally. Seems to be something he's genuinely passionate about. There's a link to the website, and his Instagram bio says every now and then he'll have a random fan he's never even met just drop him $5 or $10 to donate to the foundation, which is cool. So one of those things, just to learn more about that family, why it's passionate to them. You can read that story on The Athletic. As far as Ryan as a player, I think he's interesting. Like I said, I don't know if he has any future in this organization, but I see where the Tigers brought him in. It's a 279 career hitter in the minor leagues, 360 OBP. It's a really good hit tool. Talking to AJ Hinch, the Tigers are trying to help him get some more balls on the inner third of the plate and get him, put it in the air a little bit. He doesn't have a lot of power, but he's had a really natural hit tool. Probably not a great defender, but he can move a little bit, can play several different positions. Honestly, seems like a guy who, like, in the 2019 or like 2021 Tigers, maybe could have got a lot of playing time, and he would hit like 260. And like, I don't know if there's really a spot for him now, but he has some things to offer an organization. And if he can unlock the hit tool a little bit, I think he could still float around the big leagues for a few years. So one of those guys that, I don't know if we'll hear his name much ever again in Detroit, but certainly I gotta admit, I'm gonna be rooting for the kid.
Yeah, he's a name that when you're kind of tracking Toledo, like like he's a part of that group of guys that's at least interesting. Now some more than others, but he's a part of the group of guys who are like, okay, well, we'll see. Maybe there's something here. And so I'm happy that he's a member of the Tigers organization. Somewhere around here, I still have a couple of his rookie cards laying around, you know, and really happy to see that he's, you know, the type of guy that, again, like if you talk about culture and all that stuff, not going to have a culture problem with Ryan in your clubhouse. So, okay, let's transition to something that's good and wholesome, Cody, to something that's not. And that was Tiger's Twitter this week.
Oh, my God.
This might have been, and this is not me calling out anybody specifically, this might have been the unhealthiest Tiger's Twitter discourse week that I can remember in a long time. Maybe since, like, maybe, like, last April when they started out, like, so poor or whatever. But that was actually something practical that was being analyzed.
Yeah, we're way too toxic for late February, early March, nothing of consequence actually happening. We have people throwing out some ridiculous takes. We have people fighting with each other. What's going on?
Yeah, this is supposed to be the feel-good time of the baseball season for, like, literally every team, basically. And so I thought we should kind of take a moment here. Now, if you're a regular listener, this is going to be boring to you. But if you're somewhat new or you're just getting back into baseball, this is going to be very key. So we're, what, 26 minutes into this podcast, approximately. And I kind of wanted to do just a couple minutes Spark Notes version of, like, the Tigers' reasoning for moves or lack thereof. And so I'll kind of give my spiel, Cody, and then you kind of fill in wherever you want afterwards. So so Matt Chapman just signed for 3 years, $54 million. He's got opt-outs after 1 and 2. And that was a name that a lot of, you know, throughout the offseason was kind of thrown around. Should the Tigers get this guy? And early in the offseason, obviously, he was seeking something longer and more grand, and the Tigers were never going to do that. And as we got into spring training, it made it, well, maybe, we even talked about it. Well, maybe, you know, blah, blah, blah. It never really was going to be a thing. They signed Gio Urshela for 1 year, $1.5 million plus some incentives or whatever. And the thing is that third base was never going to be a position in this offseason that the Tigers were going to block young players like Jace Young or give opportunities to the aforementioned Andy Ibañez. Zach McKinstry is going to get some time there. Matt Vierling, now it looks like he's going to get some more center field action, but still, he's an option over there. They had a plan at third base. I'm not saying it was sexy. I'm not even saying it was, like, you know, I 100% agree with it. But that was the plan the whole time. They were never going to try to get a multi-year expensive third baseman this offseason. Next offseason, we'll see. This offseason was never going to happen. Credit to Wyatt Langford for killing it. Well, he killed it after being drafted, and he's killing it still in spring training. The Tigers had the opportunity to take him. We weren't 100% sure he was going to be available. When he was available, I think a lot of people kind of expected him to be the pick, outfielder from the University of Florida. The Tigers instead went with Max Clark. High schooler, Indiana. A guy that most draft Knicks would say could have been the number one overall pick in various other drafts of recent memory. This was a pretty loaded draft at the top. So the Tigers get him. They agree to something slightly under slot so they can fill it up with the rest of their draft, including Kevin McGonigal, who is a promising prep player as well. Max Clark has legitimate 5 tools. I'm not going to give the whole scouting report, but it's not a mistake to bet on someone like Max Clark in a vacuum. Now, years from now, we'll know whether it's the right pick, but that's the thought process behind it. And the DH spot. The Tigers are not going to sign, maybe I'll look stupid by saying this, they're not going to sign JD Martinez. They want to have, in the words of AJ Hinch, optionality. AJ Hinch has not been able to play around with the DH spot since he's been with the Tigers. He was not going to give that up for a 36-year-old JD Martinez. I'm sorry, just not going to happen. Now, is he a better hitter than basically everybody on the roster? Yes, but that's not how they're looking at the team in terms of how they want to construct it, how they think they're going to be able to win games this year, whether it's worth it from a cost-benefit analysis. They have a plan for DH, and it's a lot of dudes. None of them have the track record of J.D. Martinez, but they're guys that they legitimately believe in fit the ethos of this team. So, in summation, third base, plan, committee. We'll see about Jace Young. Or at the time, we kind of thought Colt Keith, but now, obviously, he's at second base. So, Jace Young, Colt Keith, whatever. The whole time, it was, we're going to create opportunities for them. Remember Scott Harris's opening presser, we want to create opportunities for young players and players to get better. Max Clark over Lankford, you're taking the higher upside guy potentially over the more established sure thing. We'll see if that works out. And J.D. Martinez slash any DH signing was not going to happen because A.J. Hinch wants to tinker like a mofo with his lineup, and he's got options here, and he wants to do it based on matchups, based on situations, based on this, based on that, and it was never going to happen. So that's my summary of, I think, kind of the biggest three complaints for the Tigers offseason thus far. Cody, what do you have to add for that?
Yeah, that's a lot on all three topics. Let's look at the deal Matt Chapman signed. You have the terms in front of you, Kieran?
Yeah, 3-year, 54. I don't know the per year.
All right. Well, they're opt-outs. They're opt-outs after,
yes,
after, you know, each of the first two seasons. So the Tigers weren't going to – Matt Chapman's about to be 30. They weren't going to sign him to, like, the 7-year deal he wanted. Turns out no one was going to sign him to the 7-year deal he wanted. Now, if Matt Chapman would have been out there on a 1-year deal, I wouldn't be opposed to the Tigers saying, screw it, bring him in. All right, but I totally get why they did not want a multi-year commitment to Matt Chapman when you have Jace Young coming up the system, when you have pretty good free agent crop that includes Alex Bregman next year. That may end up being better for you long-term. We talked last week, would Scott Harris do this opt-out? I think Scott Harris wants no part of a contract like this. What if Matt Chapman has a down year? He had a little bit of a down year last year. Then you're locked in. It's like the Javi Baez thing. Then he ain't opting out. And if he has a good year, then he opts out. Like, it was just – Matt Chapman was never remotely on the table for the Tigers. That's just the fact. And I don't think it is because they were being quote-unquote cheap. Sometimes you can accuse the organization of that sort of behavior, and maybe you're not wrong. I don't think this was really about the money. It was that Scott Harris did not view it as the best long-term vision for this organization. Max Clark, Wyatt Langford's pretty good, man. I think I said at the time, yes, I probably would have taken Wyatt Langford. But I think Max Clark is too good of a prospect to, like, pan the pick, at least right now. He's really young. I think probably positional value is what it comes down to. He can play center field. The Tigers think he can be a plus center fielder. And if he is, maybe he ends up being a more valuable player than Langford over the long run. I wouldn't be surprised if Tigers end up being wrong. Maybe Max Clark's a really good player, but Wyatt Langford is a special, special talent, and they get the pick wrong. I don't know. Let's check back on this one in 5 years. Like, Max Clark is still really young. He's yet to play above low A. Wyatt Langford is a dude, all right? He'd look great in this Tigers order right now, but the Tigers did just fine in Max Clark too, is how I feel about it at this moment in time. And then our third point, J.D. Martinez. I think the Tigers should sign J.D. Martinez, all right? So I'm not gonna carry water for the Tigers here. I think they should just sign him. But as has been established, they ain't going to. The AJ Hinch matchups thing is one. I also think it's probably coming from above AJ in a lot of ways. Way to get these young guys that Scott's building the organization around at bats. Who did everyone want to see in the big leagues last September, Kieran? They want to see Colt Keith,
Jay Hinn.
Jay Hinn is probably not even going to be on this roster. Jay Hinn, especially if you bring in a JD Martinez, is not getting any at bats. Wouldn't be the worst problem to have, but that's a glimpse of why the Tigers do not seem to have any interest in J.D. Martinez. Those are the facts. And sorry, radio personalities out there, probably not worth continuing to complain about it a whole lot.
Like, because, look, honestly, here's the thing. Every one of those things that they did is certainly disagreeable, certainly worth pushback, certainly worth criticism. But we're just here to tell you what they're what them being the Tigers, what their thought process was and their reasoning was. And people can disagree with it or agree with it as they wish. For Chapman, real quick, keep in mind this is his age 31 season. So keep in mind, you know, something like that. It's a reasonable rate contract, 16, 17, 18, but again, with the opt-outs after the first 2 years, it's also like a safe contract for him. Like, if he sucks, like, he's still going to be making plenty of money, all right? And Bellinger, the same thing. Like, these guys are settling financially. So keep that in mind, you know what I mean? And there's still Snell out there. And, you know, hey, why don't we start right now, Cody? Let's start a hot topic right now. The Tigers should sign Blake Snell. The Tigers should sign Jordan Montgomery.
Nah.
Let's just do it right now.
Nah.
Let's just do it.
Why not? Well, Snell greatly overperformed his fifth last year. I could see that becoming. I mean, he is a two-time Cy Young winner, but, you know, yeah. I could see that becoming a bad deal. Montgomery doesn't miss a lot of bats. He was, like, pretty comparable to Eduardo Rodriguez, in my opinion. The Tigers don't seem to be missing E-Rod a ton right now. We'll see what happens when the regular season comes around. But we're sitting here talking about who's going to make the rotation as it is. Tigers are in a pretty good spot with their pitching. I do think the Tigers should have actually, you know, I thought the Tigers should have spent more on pitching instead of, say, Kenta Maeda, get maybe one of these guys we're talking about right now. But when you have Kenta Maeda, like, you put your flag in the ground, you have plenty of starters. It doesn't make a lot of sense to add another one right now.
Yeah, and again, for every offseason is different.
Over Jack Flaherty, yeah, I'll take Blake Snell over Jack Flaherty. Would have done it.
Bull take.
But now that you got Jack Flaherty, it was like, all right, it's just not going to happen.
Yeah, exactly. And everybody's got to keep in mind the timing of this thing. Like, did anyone, when the Tigers are going after Maeda and Flaherty, like, did they think that Montgomery and Snell on March 3rd would still be unsigned?
That's probably true. You're probably predicting, like, getting bigger deals than they're ultimately going to get. So, you know, like, all right, now we're actually having a good discussion. Maybe did Scott Harris misplay that market a little bit? Or it's more Scott Boras greatly overplayed his hand, and now there are 28 GMs out there being like, oh, maybe we should have signed Blake Snell in December.
Yeah, I mean, that's discussion for another day, probably next offseason, but they'll never do it, but they need to have some sort
You want to get the pot stirred for next offseason? We're a year ahead of schedule in this. Alex Bregman. Everyone's going to want Alex Bregman. A lot of people already do. I kind of want Alex Bregman. But his 40-homer season was in 2019. It's kind of a long time ago, man. He has not had the same power at the plate. He's had some injuries that have zapped some of his power. He's still a really good player, but he's actually – I mean, he's worth 4.9 WAR last year, but he's a long way from his 8.9 2019 WAR self.
What
if he has a little bit of a down year? What if he has a little bit of a down
year? He's going to have a great year this year because he's going into a contract year. That's how
you're
it works.
Probably right. But are you going to want to get him a 7-year deal? I could see Scott Harris being like, eh, nah.
Well, here's the thing. The bottom line is, this situation solves itself with the development of Jace Young. So Jace Young, who for those that may not remember, he was a Texas Tech stud, just like his brother, and a second baseman. A guy that no one really wanted to brag about his fielding abilities, but he was a second baseman. He has since made the move to third, and I'm sure he'll still play some second base or whatever, but he has since made the move to third. And he profiles as a player that his bat's going to define his career. It's not going to be his glove in any fashion. His bat is going to define his career. And for whatever it's worth, he came up in as much of a big situation as you can have on March 3rd of spring training. He came up in a big situation. He delivered a base knock. He got an RBI. He had a walk earlier. I know Scott Harris didn't draft him, but that's Scott Harris to a T. Dominate the strike zone, get a walk, get a key hit. you wrote about him this week, kind of like the personality of Jace, and we talked about it at the time of the draft. I'll just tell people, because I assume most Tigers fans are not connected to many Tech baseball fans. I'm just going to tell you right now, this guy was revered as a freshman and like sort of like semi-college baseball fans that are connected to Tech. Every time I see him, they're like, oh, how's Jace doing? Like, he has that kind of pull with his alma mater. And I do think he's a guy worthy of not blocking third base for 4 years. Right now. Now, the season may play out and that doesn't happen, but right now I do actually deem him worthy of that. Do you, having talked to him, interacted with him, you've done multiple stories about him with his coaches and all that stuff, like, if this guy fails as a major leaguer, it will have nothing to do with attitude and work ethic. So, like, in your opinion, right now, is Jace worthy, a prospect worthy of not blocking?
Yes, he's worthy of not blocking. I don't think he'll probably ever be as good as Alex Bregman at the same time. So it's, you know, I don't think he's going to become a superstar. I think he's going to be a good major league regular with a good hit tool. Probably always be some questions about his defense, regardless of which infield position he is playing. But I love Jason Young's attitude. I mean, he is intense. He's kind of a throwback, just dirtbag ball player type of guy. I think you want a guy like that on your team for sure. But it's also like, I'm just pulling up some of these numbers now, and it's like, okay, well, like, would you not sign Bregman? I don't know what Bregman's going to be like in his 30s. Bregman right now, you know, in 8 seasons in the big leagues has already accumulated, let's see, 35.4 wins above replacement. So will Jace Young ever be worth 35.4 wins above replacement in his career?
Probably not.
Honestly, probably not. And there are probably some fans out there being like, what? We've been told this guy is the truth. It's kind of a reminder of how hard it is to sustain a big league career. Chris Bryant, rookie of the year, MVP, 28 WAR. All right. I can see Jace Young. Here's just a comp.
Talk about regrettable contracts from the Cubs World Series, by the way.
Here's a good comp I pulled up. Corey Koski. Remember Corey Koski? A lot of people probably don't even remember Corey Koski. Corey Koski hit .292 with a .393 on base percentage for the 2003 Minnesota Twins. I don't know if Jace Young will ever achieve that sort of height, but Corey Koski was a good big leaguer for 9 years. 24.6 WAR, but had a couple really strong years and faded off quickly. Hit left-handed, like, you know, a little bit of power, not a lot of power. Good hit tool. This is probably like a ceiling for Jace Young, honestly. And it's the type of guy you would want on your team. So I don't think the Tigers should assign Matt Chapman this offseason. I don't know that Jace Young is going to go to the Hall of Fame, but I think he's going to have a good big league career.
You know, in terms of Jace Young discourse, I'll be very happy when we stop having to, like, make his, like, the way he holds the bat, like, something that we have to mention. Because people can go back to the, you know, since they drafted him. I've never thought that was a deal, even, let alone a big deal. Like, it's just, like, well, it's pre-pitch
different.
And then his...
It's different.
It's different. It's different. But his hands are at the spot where they need to be once, like, the load is happening.
I think,
like,
Javier Baez should start holding his bat like that. I love the way Craig Monroe has been breaking this down because he's... Oh, my God.
Sorry, I had to...
I like the way Craig Monroe's been breaking it down because he's right, man. Javi, maybe his setup is a little different. Maybe there's not as much coil. His bat path is still terrible, and he twitches the bat toward the pitcher. The cap of the bat is facing the pitcher during his load. So he has to get the barrel of the bat from up here to there. It's a long path, and Simo's been, like, harping on it because he's right. If you hold the bat like Jace Young, you don't have to do that. It's such an unconventional setup that actually makes a lot of sense, the way Jace Young holds the bat.
True. Randomly, I want to shout out Simo for doing a great job on the radio so far. I know he's not going to be there full time. I think we're actually going to see him on Monday. Literally, see him on Monday as a part of the TV broadcast. First time with the new setup. SEMO's been great. And I also wanted to shout out just real quick, George Lombard, having an ultimate moment today. Got to see his son in a major league spring training game, you know, for the Yankees. And apparently he's got another kid that will probably be on, that's already on draft radars and will be a highly valued prospect here in a couple of years.
The Lombard kids are amazing, man. Awesome. Talk with some of the Tigers players who've been around him. Like George's youngest son's like a soccer phenom. Like, he was like, yeah, I watch him play soccer. It's unbelievable. Like, there's some genes in that family.
Hey, well, shout out to George always. All right.
Shout out to George. I'd love to talk to you.
All right. Well, this is kind of timely, Cody. There's some discourse on general MLB Twitter, and then, you know, it's not like the Tigers have had a whole lot of home broadcasts. Oh wait, they haven't. Today, the day that this podcast released, the Tigers will have a home broadcast. We will be officially in the Jason Benetti era of the Bally / whatever it becomes for the broadcast. And it got me thinking a little bit, Cody. Like, it's a common complaint, and I tend to agree with it, about the lack of viewing options for these spring training games. And we talk a lot during spring training about how some of this stuff matters. It a lot of times doesn't really. But at the same time, like, you're in the baseball content business. We are in the baseball content business. I feel like there's no downside to being in the baseball content business if you're Major League Baseball / these individual teams with these broadcasts. And I guess my question is, should Major League Baseball / the Tigers or any other team be more, I think it's actually a nice word, invested in having these spring training games available for video and audio viewing / listening? Because this is, yeah, keep in mind, this is an interesting time right here for baseball. The buzz is only going to grow up until April, but there's no football, right? College basketball does not matter for like another 2 weeks, right? In terms of the viewing public and all that stuff. The NBA certainly doesn't matter for another month. And that's not me saying that. That's the players who set out games. And so, like, this is a nice opportunity for baseball to kind of have its moment, especially trying to promote the stars and the game as we get into a season, which you are going to be competing with NFL offseason. You are going to be competing with basketball playoffs, March Madness to a certain extent. I just feel like it's a lost opportunity, and there's no downside to making these games as readily available for viewing and listening as possible. And the biggest indication of that was just a couple days ago. Yeah, Paul Skenes, number one overall pick less than a year ago. Jackson Holliday, consensus number one prospect in baseball, matched up. Oh, well, I'm glad I was able to watch it via somebody's iPhone camera video or one of the team's social media teams putting out video. Couldn't watch it in the moment. And I'm telling you, like, the NFL wouldn't do it, in fairness. It was 4 games, now it's 3 games, so it's a lot less. But the NBA promotes the hell out of Summer League, which is way less important than spring training. Way less. So, I ask you, is this something that baseball / the teams actually have to make these decisions? Is this something that needs to be improved on? Given that it is spring training, where it's a lot of guys that, you know, are not going to get past much of this in their baseball careers.
Well, the Holliday Skenes thing is a great example. The lack of availability of spring training broadcast seems like another instance of Major League Baseball not just struggling to grow the game, but not even serving its own fan base to the fullest. I do think we got to be real in that the audience for spring training baseball is probably very small. I can't imagine being enough of a sicko to watch NBA Summer League at my house, but there are people who do it. And so that, again, like, what is the downside? I'm not coming up with much. I would imagine the reason games are not, every game is not broadcast is because it's not free. There are a lot of people that go into creating a broadcast, and you have to pay those people. But Major League Baseball should never cry poor, and its clubs should never cry poor. In the grand scheme, if you devote a little more to that, I think it could only help the sport, and it wouldn't hurt it. And in terms of your year-long budget, I don't think it would actually be that big of a chunk. I don't know all the business ins and outs, but it is a shame that in a event that, in a sport that caters everything to the public, you know, why would anything not be out there for public consumption? You know, I struggle with it. I go usually for about the first 2 weeks and the last 2 weeks, roughly, of spring training. I don't go in the middle because of another business reality. The Athletic, it gets really expensive. The Athletic's not paying for me to be down there the full time. And so when I'm home trying to do my job, when other writers like me trying to create content that ultimately promotes the league and the sport, it's a little harder to do when you're having to just rely on mostly the radio. Not even every game is on the radio. You know, even if you could just set up a center field camera, maybe it doesn't even have all the camera angles, but if I can overlay the Dan Dickerson broadcast, you know, I'd be happy. I think the biggest diehard Tigers fans would certainly tune in. So yeah, I mean, come on. It's 2024. There's got to be some way to be able to watch live video Major League Spring Training games.
Yeah, I mean, it can absolutely be done. It can absolutely be done. And we live in an information age now, and there's, again, like Dan always says, like, I don't have a monitor, you know, when he's broadcasting the games, or you don't necessarily have all the, I mean, you have miles per hour, but you don't get a lot of, you don't get the whole statistical broadcast.
That's also ridiculous. Why is every ballpark not have, like, publicly available Hawkeye now? A lot of the minor league parks do, not all of them. Like, what are we doing? We know how valuable that is to the teams. Come on.
Well, we have, yeah, there's not any actual reason other than we just don't do it. Like, that's like that's really what it comes down to. But yeah, I mean, it on the surface, it just seems, maybe ridiculous is too strong of a word, but it just kind of seems like, come on, really? That we got to wait 3 weeks, almost a month, for a Tigers broadcast of a spring training game? You know, it just kind of seems silly. It just kind of seems silly when you say it out loud. So it's, I wouldn't say it's one of the things that baseball has done that they like shoot themselves in the foot or step over or whatever. I don't think it's that extreme, but as you said, as I said, there just doesn't really seem to be that much downside. So that's kind of my two cents.
The less you can watch, the less people will notice how bad the jerseys are.
You know? We've seen Fanatics doing some butt covering here recently. So hey, I respect it. No indications that anything's going to change. By the way, right? There has been no
literal or figurative butt covering.
I did not intend to do that. But yeah, that I guess that is what it is. Yeah, no indications of any changes so far, by the way, unless you've heard something and I haven't.
Yeah, Tony Clark keeps hitting, like, we, you know, maybe something will change and the companies are saying nothing. I just don't think they want to eat the cost. So again, you know, these big corporations don't want to lose any money. That's a shame.
Everything costs everything. Everything affects everything, as they say. All right, Cody, anything else you wanted to get to before we get out of here?
No, I think that covers it. You know, the next 2 weeks of spring, pending an injury or something very bad, it's probably going to get kind of slow. But there's real meaningful baseball that you can watch, theoretically, as long as you're not in a blackout zone, on television at the end of this month. So it's going to be here fast, man. Opening day, not too far away.
That is true. And we got some things in the works here for this podcast. I want to thank everybody for following us on Twitter at Cody Stavenhagen. I am at Kieran_Steckley. Our pod page is at Turn Corner Pod. YouTube, Turn the Corner Podcast, Apple, Spotify. 5-star review if you feel so inclined. And also be on the lookout for a mailbag. I feel like we got to do a mailbag during the spring, Cody. So I think we'll do that here within the next couple of weeks. So be on the lookout for that. any kind words, any interactions that we have on X, formerly known as Twitter, I should say, is appreciated. And I'm telling you what, we have a lot of fun doing this. I am ready for the season to start because, you know, from my perspective, I got my anniversary like a couple days before opening day. So I got a lot of things looking forward to at the end of the month, Cody. But it's going to, you're right, it's going to be here before we know it. So for Cody Stavenhagen, I am Kieran Steckley. Everybody have a great day.